Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 283, triggered, of Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by, finally back, my co-host, Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way, back to the Wednesday show. He did point out that he was here on Monday, so it's, you know, it hasn't been that long since he's been, you know, on the program, period. But Wednesday, it's been a minute. Adnan, welcome back. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I was here Monday, and I was here for the... apparently, I'm only here on Patreon shows lately. So,
exclusive.
You know, you sort of,
yeah,
you have to pay to see me. That's not a me thing. That's a Dave Choate pricing thing. You know, I think there was also some talk about a higher tier pricing where if you opt into that, I would do a mock draft with my shirt off. So, you know,
call that
alcoholic only fans.
Yeah. And then if you go up to the highest tier, you get Dave. Doing the mock draft with the shirt off, that you get the Dave meet, and that's the highest tier. We haven't released that yet.
There's no one that's reached that level.
No, that is, you know, I think George Costanza is getting close to unlocking that level, but you know, it's at Dave's discretion at this point, so you know, we can't say when or if that will happen, but there is a mythical point where we do get to see the hashtag Dave meet. But welcome everyone to the show. Thank you guys so much for tuning in with us today. We appreciate you. I'm glad the cursed show number was not like the night before the draft or the draft itself, because that might have bad tidings. But luckily, we get the cursed show number out of the way the week before the draft. So we got a nice little bit of distance between now and then in case there's any sort of shenanigans or voodoo that perhaps might occur with this sort of show number, any sort of thing. You know, so glad that we're getting this out of the way tonight. I think it's going to be a good show. We're going to fight through the 283 number here to deliver a good show to you guys. And obviously we had an interesting story drop today about the whole Bill Belichick saga. We'll talk about that a bit just because it is interesting and has a lot to do with the Falcons, which, you know, you don't usually see major NFL news stories have to do a lot with the Falcons. So we'll talk about that a bit. And then of course get into sort of the topic of the night, which kind of spurred on by our live mock draft, but basically talking about, you know, is this going to be a different approach? Because we've seen, you know, it is still Terry Fontenot. The scouting staff is the same. To be fair, a lot of the coaching staff is the same too. But the head coach is different. You know, we have Raheem Morris coming in. So how might the Falcons change their draft strategy? Will they change? Will they remain mostly a BPA-focused team, especially early in the draft, or will it change at the top? That's going to be our topic tonight. Before we jump into that, let me bring you a real quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, including the MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoffs. What is the Hawks playing? It's tonight at 9:30, right?
Tonight, yep. It's going to be after this show. So, you know, I'll be getting off of this show and enjoying some Atlanta Hawks postseason basketball, technically.
So how you feeling? Because it's like one and done, like at the NFL, right, for this?
Yeah, at this point, I hate to be completely honest with you. If you're 10th place, I'm of the mindset that if you're in 10th place, you don't even like deserve this opportunity. But hey, you know what? Through the grace of the NBA, you have this opportunity. So, you know, anything can happen in a one-game setting. Anything can happen.
Yeah, you know, how have the Hawks fared? It's the Bulls, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if we get the bull, like, I think we have a good chance tonight, but then Friday will be, you know, Friday will be more difficult. But
well, didn't you guys beat the Celtics like twice back to back at one point during the season?
Yeah, the Hawks are play-in champions. Like,
that's true.
The Hawks are 3-0 in play-ins over the past 2 years. Like, nobody's better than the Hawks in the play-in. It's like the 96 Bulls. It's the play-in Hawks. Like,
yes. Undefeated, just like Younghoe on onside kicks. It's like if you can get that scenario where that's going to happen, then you're undefeated. But otherwise, not so great. But you know, hey, in that one area, elite.
Hey, we're so good. Not when the lights are brightest, but when the lights are the most medium. You know that's when we shine the brightest during those medium sized lights.
That there you go. And I imagine, you know, if you go to Bet Online, the Hawks probably decent underdogs in this matchup. So that might be what you want to do, but you know, don't bet with your heart, bet with your head. That's usually the advice I would give. But no matter what you bet on, guys, you can get all the latest stats, news, and scores available all the time on Bet Online, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there, including of course the NBA. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head to that website today, BetOnline, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, folks. Let's dive in, first of all, to this Belichick article, because it was fascinating, some of the stuff that came out in this. You know, right off the top, we hear, like, basically, like, if you listen to our shows about this topic, like, a lot of the stuff in the article sounds exactly like what we were telling you about Bill Belichick. Like, teams are concerned about his potential, you know, for wanting control. They are worried about his timeline of when he's going to retire. They wonder if he can trust them. They worry about if he's just going to blow up the building and then leave in a couple years. Like, all this stuff was in there. And it came out to the point that, like, man, like, Robert Kraft was maybe, like, calling Arthur Blank and saying, like, hey, you know, you may want to reconsider this. What do you think about the article sort of confirming a lot of the stuff we were speculating about? Because we did not have, you know, Arthur Blank wasn't calling us and telling us what he was doing. Like, we were speculating, obviously, but
that
ends
that
up being true.
Know.
Yeah.
Yes. Viewers know. Who knows? Maybe we have years of the big dogs down in Florida. We don't actually. That's why we complain about the team so much. it was I think Matt Chambers put it best this morning. I put the article in our Discord early this morning when I got the Bleacher Report notification for it. He said, finally, something exciting happens with the Falcons offseason, because, like, really, ever since that day one of free agency when this team signed Kirk Cousins, it's sort of been radio silence other than a few, you know, free agent moves here and there. But, yeah, this was a bit of a bombshell of an article. Like you said, most of it was stuff that we were already speculating on, but the big bombshell type piece was Robert Kraft telling Arthur Blank, yeah, don't trust this guy. Like, he's a headache. You're not going to be able to get along with him. It's going to be, you know, you're not going to, the article said something about how he wouldn't really have that family vibe that Arthur Blank looks for in a head coach, which personally I don't care about. Like, you know, if you have a family vibe and you have, and you're winning 5-6 games, then, you know, I don't give a fuck about that. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, that was really spicy, because, you know, you would think Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, they've been together 24 years, the Patriot way. And, you know, for this to leak, and it said that there was a couple of sources that a source that spoke with a couple of people, one close to Belichick, one close to Kraft, whom both confirmed that. And it was like, yeah, if you're Arthur Blank, you don't really blame him for passing up on that, because if his former employer, if his reference, like, imagine if you, if you're interviewing for a job, they call your reference that you put on your resume, and the person whom you put as your reference said, yeah, no, don't hire this dude, or this guy's a headache. Like, you're not going to be able to get along with this guy at all. So I think that, I mean, based on what we knew regarding how fired up Blank was supposedly for Bill Belichick, and, you know, having him out on his yacht and bringing him for that 4.5-hour interview in his home, I think that may have been the turning point, that Robert Kraft phone call, which is, you know, it's pretty huge. But yeah, the two things that I did, the two other things I did get from that article. One was apparently Belichick was all in on just being the head coach, mm-hmm. which, I mean, I think we speculated that he would have wanted more control over, in the building over the roster. He said he would be completely fine with working with Terry Fontenot. Wouldn't have been as fine working with Rich McKay, but, you know, hard to blame him for that. And the other thing I got from the article, so, you know, fair is fair. I think we were wrong about that speculation. We figured that he wouldn't want to be just the head coach. And if he was right. just the head coach, I think we would have been more than fine with the hiring happening.
Yeah.
The other thing I got from that, it was just one sentence, but David Tepper is literally the worst owner in football, and maybe in all of sports, because there was that one sentence that said that he goes through – like analytical data to critique his play callers and his head coaches. And it's like, who would want to work for a micromanager like this? Like, that was just, I was laughing when I read that part.
Yeah, it was really interesting. A lot of the details in there, and, you know, again, it sort of confirms everything that we thought, which was that, you know, Belichick was absolutely the heavy favorite up until something changed. And something did change. And according to this article and these sources, it was that, you know, Kraft called Blank and they had a personal chat where they sort of went through it. And Kraft was like, you know, I think this would, I don't think he came out and said like, don't hire him, but he said like, I basically had a hard time trusting him. And like our, you know, their relationship had deteriorated and all this stuff. And, you know, that is obviously very intriguing to see that actually put pen to paper there. But
also, in fairness, like, that sort of is a death sentence, though, is it not? Like,
it's basically the same thing, right? Saying like
sure, you're not directly saying don't hire him, but you're pretty much indirectly saying that in this business where Robert Kraft is someone who has been with Bill Belichick for 24 years. And this was pretty much a reference phone call. Like, Arthur Blank was calling Robert Kraft to ask him about that. And unless you're, you know, sort of propping him up and saying all of this positive stuff about him, I mean, anything else is sort of like a don't hire him indirectly, which this sounded exactly like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, it's obviously quite a fall, but given everything that was going on in New England, it doesn't totally shock me either. But it was interesting to see that, you know, basically according to the source, that like none of the Falcons decision makers had Belichick even in the top three of their choices. And, you know, it was, you know, confirmed by these sources apparently that what had been said, that which was that Raheem Morris was the unanimous choice, like this corroborated that. Also found it interesting that Mike McDonald was allegedly the number two choice, which given that the Seahawks ended up hiring him, that doesn't shock me either because he seemed like he was a very strong candidate. And then that Bobby Slowick had impressed them, but that they kind of were not willing to wait and try to interview him other times. And they kind of wanted to pounce on Morris, but that Slowick was number three. So just an interesting look at that. You know, ultimately time will tell, but I did think one, you know, line in the article was very interesting, which is basically that Raheem Morris is kind of where Belichick was when he got the opportunity with the Patriots, which is like, he'd had some previous stops. He had had a previous stop as a head coach. It didn't work out. He was kind of looking for that second chance to get back in there, looking to sort of change the narrative about him. And, you know, obviously for Belichick, that worked out to an exceptional degree, where he's going to be in the Hall of Fame and won, you know, an absurd number of Super Bowls and brought tons of sustained success. So hopefully Raheem Morris can bring the Falcons at least a little bit of that level of success. That would be nice if we could have that.
I'll take like a sixth of that success.
Yeah, like just one Super Bowl. That'd be cool. You know, I don't want to get greedy. You know, let's just do the one. If we could just get the one, I'll be satisfied.
We'll go from there. Like,
yeah, we can go from there. Morris, yeah.
Raheem Morris will have a statue, like, if he wins this team a Super Bowl. I feel pretty confident in saying that, given, you know, how putrid this franchise has been since its inception.
Yeah. So that doesn't take much. Just a Super Bowl. You know, that's all we need. But yeah, that was a fascinating article and sort of a deeper look at that situation. And you know, I think the Falcons made the right call. I mean, obviously, I was never high on Belichick coming to Atlanta. I know you weren't either. So we're not exactly shedding any tears over him not coming here. I know a lot of fans were really hoping that he would. This kind of sheds a little bit more light on it. And it's not behind a paywall on ESPN Plus. If you want to go read the article, it's up on ESPN. It's like front page type news. So definitely give it a read. It's a little bit long, but it definitely goes into a lot of detail. I think it's definitely worth your time. So give it a look. Give it a read if you haven't yet. Great piece there by a number of reporters. I think there was like three of ESPN's biggest reporters were contributing to it. So definitely a lot of work going into that piece. But yeah, moving on to just the Falcons here. It's been pretty interesting to get through this process. And, you know, we've now done two live mock drafts. I've done like six. I'm going to probably do two more mocks at least before Thursday, and we're going to do another live mock draft on next Wednesday's show. That'll be, of course, our live mock draft where everyone is welcome and everyone is involved. I'm sure that'll be chaotic and fun. But you know, Adnan, last time we collectively, all of us, we nailed two picks on that live mock. We nailed Bijan and Bergeron in the first and second round. So, you know, maybe that live mock.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
hey, that's a feather in our cap right there. Yeah, I mean, if we can nail two more picks this time, then, you know, that's more than most people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if I get one pick, I'm usually pretty happy. So definitely an interesting situation there. But again, reminder that we're going to be doing that next week, folks. And also that we will be once again, of course, having our draft party all three nights of the draft. We will be having, courtesy of George Costanza, giving away every single night of the draft, a $50 NFL shop gift card, as well as a fourth gift card exclusive to the patrons and channel members. So if you're interested in getting involved in that, just be here for the shows, which I, you know, don't, not to toot our own horn or anything, but I mean, I think we're fun. You know, I think it's a good show. I think we do a great job. So you should check it out for that. But also there is the upside of an NFL shop gift card potentially there as well. So, you know, hey, I'm just saying.
Shout out to George for always, you know, always hooking us up with that. But yeah, $50 NFL shop gift card, that's good enough to get you a t-shirt at the NFL shop these days.
Yeah, I mean, that's a nice t-shirt, though. I mean,
it is a really nice t-shirt.
Really the fabric, nice, you know, impeccable. Yeah.
A really nice Falcons jersey.
Yep.
Or it can get you halfway there to a jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's you're well on your way, you know. I don't want to like pick for you, you know, like I feel like if we bought like an actual piece of merch, it would probably be like, I want you to choose, you know, like you guys should be able to choose what you want. So that's why we're going with the cards. Yeah. But thanks again to George for that. And speaking of George, George with a couple of donations here. He's got a 283 donation. Like episode 283. Wait, 28-3. I'm triggered. Make the painful memories go away, please. Also, just in case you guys forgot, Atlanta should draft Joelle. Yes, thank you, George. Adnan. Joelle is George's guy this cycle. Just
is he?
In case.
Joelle has been my guy for months at this point. Like, at the very, even since before my hiatus, I was pounding the Joelle drum. So George, I'm right there with you. I wasn't really with you on the Brock Bowers train earlier this regular season when you were. When it looked like you were driving that one, but you know, I'm in on Joelle for sure. Unfortunately, I don't think he is slipping past Tennessee. However,
yeah, I it's funny because you know officially we're gonna. I think the post with the SB Nation mock draft with all the various writers is gonna be coming out. I think tomorrow or the next day, so you guys will get to see. In case you don't remember that, I was able. The Rams called the Falcons at 8. To trade up for Joelle because he fell to 8 past the Titans and the Rams wanted to get Joelle. So they traded up to 8 and we got 2025 first and a third rounder in the 2024 draft. And I was like, all right, well, we're going to see who's there. And you guys are going to get to see who fell to 19 for the Falcons. I think you're going to be pretty happy with how that turned out. But, you know, and I'm probably going to end up just because I liked how it turned out so much. I'm probably going to do a whole mock draft based on that pick. But, you know, I think Joelle is viewed in the NFL as a top prospect, like a blue chip offensive tackle. And I think anytime you can get one of those guys, you can't really argue with it much, right?
Personally, I think he's the best O-line prospect since Sewell in 21. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I know it is. I'm just going to make my Joelle case for like a minute, even though I've done it before, but you're talking about getting a dude who can slide right in there from day one. And I know people are going to say, well, we have offensive linemen. I don't think Caleb McGarry is good enough to where you pass on a prospect like Joelle. I would easily start Joelle right tackle and I would move McGarry. I think you could get a day two pick for Caleb McGarry, honestly. Look, now, what I want versus what I think the team is going to do, I don't think the team is going to do that. But I'm saying that that would be a very proactive possibility, and it would be something where you fill your need for left tackle long term because Jake Matthews isn't going to play forever. And left tackle is definitely not one of those positions where you want to sort of get caught off guard with it. after Jake Matthews, you know, either slows down and or retires, because we saw what happened last time the Falcons were caught off guard with left tackle. It was, you know, it was the main catalyst in that miserable 2013 season. I think we've just been spoiled by how consistent Matthews has been and how durable Matthews has been since the Falcons drafted him, since that 2014 season on. But I think the team definitely should be looking into, you know, the possibility of, or not the possibility, but they should be looking at life after Matthews before, you know, before they have to be reactive. I'd much rather be proactive than reactive when it comes to that left tackle position. I think this sort of kills two birds with one stone. But also at the same time, I've always been a big proponent of investing heavily in your offensive line, no yeah. matter what the draft is, no matter what the O-line looks like. I just think that football will always be won in the trenches, no matter how analytical it gets. And I think that the offensive and defensive lines, outside of quarterback, of course, will always be the singular most important units on a football field.
Yeah, no, I think that makes perfect sense. It's a great case for it. And it kind of gets at the heart of our discussion tonight. And before we get to that, I do want to get George's joke, and I apologize, George, I missed this. He says, oh, just wanted to point out that both teams, both Detroit teams, the Pistons and Lions, won the same amount of games this year, 14. At least the Hawks aren't the Pistons.
It was a disaster of a year for the Pistons. Like, I know I have friends up in Michigan who, you know, had a great time with the Lions this year, and I was very happy for them, but who are also big Pistons fans. And yeah, they thought the Pistons would be, you know, gunning for that play-in spot or, you know, just on the outside. But man, talk about a disaster of a season. Like, it was,
yeah,
it's been bad. It's been bad up in Detroit. But, you know, I guess you can only have one successful team at a time, just like, you know, just like in Atlanta seemingly. So, mm-hmm. you know, the Lions are sucking all that Pistons. It is funny. The day the Lions lost the NFC title game, earlier that day, the Pistons beat the Thunder. And everyone in Detroit was like, what are you doing?
No, not like this. Yeah. No. Yeah, it's unfortunate. But, you know, I'm glad the Lions at least had a good year, because the city of Detroit is just, they needed that dub. And I think the Lions deserve it. They've been building over time. You know, I thought the Falcons would also be involved in that, you know, playoff discussion. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But maybe this year, right? We'll see. But, yeah, I mean, the draft, like, this is kind of the crux of our show tonight and sort of the deeper discussion about what the Falcons draft strategy under Terry Fontenot. And is that Fontenot's strategy? Like, is that what Fontenot wants? Will he continue down the same path of prioritizing the same things? And the one big thing I think we've seen so far with Fontenot is that he prioritizes best player available based on talent, not position. In the first round, and they haven't overly drafted for need either. Obviously, Bijan being a key example of that. You know, I think you could make the argument that Pitts and Drake London were bigger needs considering the state of the, you know, receiving core at the time. But also, I think clearly those guys were also, you know, BPA. You know, maybe you could say that Justin Fields, you know, with the quarterback tax was higher, but I think a lot of people had Pitts above Fields in terms of like talent. But you know, what do you think? Do you think that like it is a Fontenot thing to value the BPA like that, and that's likely to continue, or do you think that was more a joint Arthur Smith Fontenot thing at that point?
Well, I do just want to address, I have been seeing a lot of stuff on social media. There's this trend of every single good pick the Falcons have made over the past few years has been a Fontenot pick, and every bad pick has been an Arthur Smith pick, which, I mean, look, I like Fontenot. I was a proponent of Smith not being here toward the end of the season, or I think it was like mid-season where I sort of settled in on that take and on that reality. And I did want Fontenot to stay with Arthur Smith being gone, but, you know, one, that's kind of ridiculous, that Twitter take,
yeah.
Because, you know, Terry Fontenot, as much as we like him, he has had his misses, and yeah. You can't just scapegoat Arthur Smith for every single thing. Now, that being said, I do think that the draft has been you know, more of a Fontenot, it has been more of a 50-50 collaboration, but with Fontenot being that main decision maker, because at the end of the day, he is the general manager. And while Smith did have his hands on player personnel, as any coach will, you know, I feel like this has been, you know, a hierarchy where Terry Fontenot has always been a little bit above Arthur Smith in that hierarchy when it comes to making these draft picks. That being said, I think that this will continue to be more of a BPA type thing. However, I feel like it'll be more of a BPA type thing where maybe you do see some more credence lent to the defense, because Raheem Morris does come from a defensive background. Now, I understand he does plan on coming in being a CEO type who doesn't call the defensive plays. That'll be Jimmy Lake's role. But to be honest with you, like, a lot of those picks in the first round going skill position, skill position, skill position, I think Fontenot was the main person that signed off on it, and he was, you know, the main person who had to green light it. But I'm hard pressed to believe that wasn't Arthur Smith really pushing those picks, you know, Kyle Pitts especially, because he does come from that tight end background. I do think the Falcons will continue that BPA philosophy and that high real athletic score philosophy that we noticed in the 2021 draft, and that the trend has continued on. But I would not be surprised at all if the team, you know, sort of leans a little bit more on the defense than they have in the past few years. Now, does that mean they'll lean more on the defense, you know, on day two and three while going fully BPA on day one? Maybe. I think we'll see this upcoming draft, because I think you and I both agree that the BPA would probably be a doozy if he's there at eight. I think we were talking about it before the draft, or before the show started. We talked about it a little bit on the live mock on Monday. And, you know, I personally think Alt would be the BPA no matter what at eight, yeah, unless somehow, yeah, Caleb Williams falls to eight, which, you know, of course, he's not falling past one. But I do think that'll sort of give us our answer, right? Because if they do go skill position again, then that'll tell me, yeah, all right, this is going to be, you know, this is the Terry Fontenot thing. This is going to be, you know, BPA no matter what the position is, as long as Fontenot's here. Whereas if they do go with one of those pass rushers or more defensive players, then I think it'll be maybe we're seeing, you know, a slight shift, because I don't want to also discount, you know, Latu or Dallas Turner. Like, yeah, sure, I don't think that those guys are BPA. I don't think that they would be BPA over Odunze, but I also don't think that they're so far off, you know, a player like Odunze as well.
Yeah, I agree. And like, again, like, we're evaluating all of this through the lens of, like, our personal draft thoughts and our personal draft boards and, like, media draft boards. But we, in case you guys don't know, every NFL team has their own draft board. They do not really care about the media draft boards. They use them as, like, a resource to kind of get an idea of where it's possible that other teams and sort of the consensus might view players, but media boards don't impact NFL boards at all. So, like, that's why you'll see teams just, like, draft someone that's in the, like, the Patriots, was Strange or whatever last year, right? He was, like, a third-round pick for a lot of people. They took him in the first round because they just don't care. Like, they don't care what other teams think. They only care what their scouting staff and their coaching staff thinks, and that's just the way this goes. So, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that the Falcons could have Dallas Turner at ranked in a similar tier to Romo Odunze, to where they're like, oh, well, it could be BPA for either of these guys. That would not shock me. You know, it depends, you know, and I agree with basically what Anand said, which is that I think there will be some tweaks. There may be some different preferences. I mean, I think we're already seeing it, obviously, with the type of players that are drafted, like, that the team is going out and getting. They've emphasized speed and athleticism in the wide receiver core above size, like, and that was never the case, really, with Arthur Smith. Like, it was always about the size and the blocking and that sort of stuff. And the Falcons immediately went out and got, like, three receivers that are all under, like, 5'11". So it's like they clearly are diverging in that way. There's no question there. And then, you know, I think the big question will be, like, how does the BPA approach change? you know, and we won't really know, right? Because if they take Dallas Turner at eight, like, I think they could easily claim, like, oh yeah, well, he was the best player available on our board at the time. And, like, maybe that's the case. But I agree with Adnan in that, like, if Joe Alt's there or Roma Dunze is there, it's probably, like, those guys are going to be ahead of the others, you know, of Dallas Turner, Laia Tuilagi, you know, whoever your preference is at edge or corner or whatnot. You know, those guys, I just feel like that Adunze and Alt are just in a, like, another tier, like a blue chip tier, whereas, like, Dallas Turner, Laia Tuilagi, like, they have questions. They're not, I still consider them, like, clear top 15 type talents. It's just, like, I think that they have a little bit more in terms of questions, in terms of runway to success, or, you know, what have you about that. And I know Corey asked, you know, do we have any concerns over Latu's neck injury? You know, he was hearing that Washington may had medically disqualified him because of it. Yeah, I mean, like, of course there's some concerns, Corey. It's just, like, we're not privy to the medical checks or anything like that. So we kind of have to go off of the Falcons are going to do their own evaluation, and he's either going to be on their board or he's not. And I'm going to work under the assumption that he's on their board, because what I heard from the combine was basically that teams had pretty much cleared him, that he got the thumbs up, that there wasn't a lot of concern about that. So that's my assumption. That could be different depending on the team, though. And we'll see, you know, what happens there. But ultimately, the question also gets into, like, this team was not willing to, it's seemingly not willing to trade down in the first round under the Smith-Fontenot regime. And I do wonder if it's different now than it would have been then. And I think this would be the draft to do it, because I think under Smith, if Roma Dunze, you know, falls to eight, I think Arthur Smith just pounces and takes Roma Dunze. And, like, I don't think that's, you know, crazy to do that or anything like that. It's just, you know, what do you think? Do you think that could potentially be a difference, Adnan, that this regime coming from the Rams, who are the Rams are a funny case, because while the Rams, like, often trade away their first round picks, they also love to stockpile mid round picks and just make a lot of draft picks in the middle rounds, and just, they don't care about their first rounders. But, you know, what do you think about, do you think this team will have a different approach in terms of their willingness to trade down in the first round?
And to heart, like, that, I would be shocked, just because I know that it's a different regime, and I know that I can't really judge this regime based on past regimes, but it just does not feel like a Falcons thing to ever trade down. Like, I think we talked about it, you know, a little bit the other day, but when was the last time this team traded down in the first round? What, like,
was it, like,
I think
the
it
90s?
Was 1990. Like, yeah. I think it was, like, exactly. And I think we previously asked this on a show, like, a year or two ago, and one of our viewers, you know, looked it up for us and found out that it was an obscene, like, amount of time, like, you know, back in the day. But, man, it's like, I won't lie, I will be absolutely shocked. Like, I'll be pleasantly, like, surprised. Like, I'm here for a trade down as long as you don't go below 12. I feel like 12, and also based on how the draft, you know, shakes out, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to be in that position to grab one of those sort of blue chip prospects. And, yeah, you know, I think someone mentioned in the chat Olu Fashanu as well. I'd be more than fine taking Fashanu if we did move back, if he was in range. Now, moving back to, like, 20, that sort of takes you out of the range of those guys. So, you know, not saying that, you know, I'm immediately going to shoot it down, but I would personally be open to it if it's, like, a Godfather type offer. Like, if JJ McCarthy falls to eight, and if someone in the 20s wants to move up and give the Falcons multiple first rounders along with their pick in the 20s, then, you know what? Bite the bullet, swallow it. Yep, let's do it. Like, we'll pick in the 20s, but we're going to have that treasure chest of picks. But yeah, like, I would like to think that this team would be very open to trading down. It's just, I've been so, you know, I'm just sort of numb against the idea based on the fact that I've been watching Falcons drafts my whole life. And that's almost never even been a possibility. Like, we talk about it leading up to the draft every single year. Like, yeah, no, it would sort of be smart to trade down, you know, stockpile the picks. It's always, I think most of the time it's smart to trade down and stockpile picks, but this team just sort of, you know, it's like they don't know that that's an option. It's like this team has never known that that's an option, from, you know, Rich McKay to Thomas Dimitrov to Terry Fontenot to, you know, pre-Rich McKay to, like, you know, pre-Arthur Blank to the Rankin Smith days. And it's just like they just never do it. But, yeah. You know, long answer short, yes, I would be very happy if they did consider it, but I just can't see it happening.
It would certainly be a departure from what they've done in the past, like at least in recent history. You know, I think Fontenot has been willing to. I think either there hasn't been an offer at all, or that the offers haven't been good enough to convince the Falcons to move off of the player. And I think in years past, it was like there was going to be a player there that the Falcons had a firm conviction and, like, wouldn't be available for much longer. Like, Kyle Pitts wasn't going to last much longer, obviously. You know, Drake London, we saw, like, three receivers go in the next, like, five picks after that or something. And then, you know, Bijan is Bijan. Like, he could have gone the very next pick, you know. So, and may have gone two picks later, you know, or whatever it was. So, they couldn't really move off with and still get their guy. I think the difference this year is that, depending on which of the edge rushers they like, because there's really not a consensus. I mean, I think most of us have Dallas Turner as the likely first edge to come off the board, given his, like, mix of traits and everything. But, you know, it could be they could have Latu highest. They could have Verse highest. You know, we know they loved Verse last year. But this year they could feasibly trade down to 10, 12, 13, you know, what have you, and still get, if not the top guy, maybe, you know, Latu, Verse, or Turner still after that trade down. And that's, I think, something that wasn't necessarily likely at all with their previous year. So I think this year could be the year to do that if they want. You know, I think it really just depends on what the offer is. You know, who's interested? What are they offering? You know, I don't think the Falcons pick up the phone for anything less than a second rounder for the most part, or equivalent value to a second rounder, you know, and that obviously makes it hard for a team like the Jets, who might be interested in jumping up a couple spots, but they don't have a second round pick, you know. So are the Falcons willing to take their third and just call it even? You know, I mean, I think obviously the Broncos don't have a second round pick either. So they might have to take a future pick or like a fourth and a second next year, which I think we talked about on the show.
I'd be open to that. Yeah, I'd be open to taking that second rounder next year and just putting it in the pocket. You know, another day three pick this year. And, you know, as much as we, you know, sort of don't want to talk about it, that tampering charge is hanging like a dark cloud over this team right now. So who knows what that penalty is going to be. It's not going to be anything for this draft, but who knows what it'll be next year. Personally, I think it'll probably be, you know, maybe a day three pick, like a fifth rounder. I would be shocked if it's anything, if it touches anything in the first two or three rounds, just because it's not really, this isn't the same as the Dolphins, no, Tom Brady tampering charge. Yeah. Like the Dolphins had Tom Brady on their yacht. Like that one's like,
when he was like just actively under contract. Like,
yeah, that one's straight blade. Like, no matter what Mike Florio is trying to, like, talk about to get clicks about, oh, like, you know,
the Falcons are going to swap picks. Yeah, with the that's Falcons fan fiction.
The Falcons and the Vikings swapping picks. And it's like, bro, like this is why nobody takes Florio seriously. And he's become, like, the old man yelling at clouds for Pro Football Reference over there. But, yeah, I mean – you know, that could be something in consideration. The team maybe wants to stock up next year, on another pick, to sort of mitigate that a little bit, that tampering charge. You know, who knows how much that's on their forefront, but I would assume that they're sort of considering all possibilities at this point.
I think so. Yeah. And I think also, you know, with regards to the trade down and just picking up extra picks in general, like, the Falcons are entering a very different team building era with Kirk Cousins. Like, we're no longer in the we're not paying a quarterback so we can pay everybody we want era. We're now in the we're paying a quarterback so we have to be careful with our money era. So that means that if they're taking a Rams like approach, you know, or a Ravens like approach, which we know Fontenot is a big fan of the way that Ozzie Newsome and the Ravens did things, and this could be an opportunity for the Falcons to start moving more towards that style, which is that they want to stock up on those middle round picks, you know, second, thirds, fourths, make a lot of those picks, stock up your roster with a ton of those like rookie contracts, and then let some of those guys go every year and just keep restocking your team with all these comp picks from all these, you know, free, they're not all huge free agents, but there's so many of them that you just pick up fourths and fifths and sixths from this stuff happening, you know, every single year. And you just start getting like 10, 12 picks every draft. And it just keeps feeding itself. And it's worked out obviously very well for the Ravens. And I wonder if this is an opportunity to do that. But you know, long story short, the Falcons have to start finding cheaper depth. Like, they have to start being able to get rookies in here that are going to fill, you know, some of their rotational roles, some of their starting roles, some of their depth roles that aren't going to cost them a lot of money, because they have a lot of money tied up now and their top players, Jesse Bates, Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, you know, they're paying Caleb McGarry quite a bit. They're paying, obviously, Jake Matthews quite a bit. They're going to have to pay soon, you know, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. Obviously, Kirk Cousins' salary accelerates next year. So they're going to have to find ways to save money by getting a lot of rookies in here. And obviously, trading down and acquiring extra picks is a great way to do that. But, you know, will they do it? Again, very interesting situation where the Falcons could be tempted to actually make this trade down that we've been sort of teasing and dancing around for many years, but never has actually come to fruition. So interested to see if that actually pans out or not this time. But I know we had Mark Bigby with the $5 super chat. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you, man. He says, there's no way the Falcons would draft Brock Bowers. You say that, but gird your loins for the Falcons to do something absurd. At least Bowers wouldn't make us worse. That's very true. I don't think that Brock Bowers would make this team worse. I just don't think he really fits the Rams offense that well. But, you know.
That's where if Arthur Smith was still here, then, you know, I can't really discount that possibility because he, you know, that man loved his tight ends. You know, yeah. What can I say? But now it's like, you know what? Maybe the Steelers move up and take Brock Bowers instead.
Yeah. You know, who knows? Could be anything's possible, right? But yeah, no, it could be, there always could be surprises. There's no doubt about that. And yeah, you know, Brandon Brass with the $2 super chat. Thank you, Brandon. So is asking about the trade down. You know, what about if they trade down a ways and you know, go for that offensive lineman that we talked about, like an Amarius Mims in the first. And like, I think honestly, Amarius Mims makes a ton of sense for this team, given their timeline. You know, it's kind of awkward finding a way for them to get him. Like, they'd probably have to trade down into like the mid teens. But, you know, Mims is such a unique player. I think he has like, what, 7 starts, 8 starts in his career. And he's going to be a top 20 pick. And that's just because that's like, just look at Amarius Mims. Like, he's like the first guy off the bus. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, like, he's like 6'7", 330. And like, he moves like a tight end. I mean, it's wild watching Amarius Mims.
The only thing with that is he's more of a developmental guy.
Exactly.
And I feel like the team is really sort of, you know, moving more so toward that win now mentality with Cousins over the next couple of years, where, you know, everything is sort of shaken out, with the schedule being what it is. And, you know, you only have a couple of years with this, you know, top, but like, you know, very, very good quarterback in Cousins under contract. So I think that would sort of deter them a little bit from Mims specifically. But, you know, if they move back, like if they move back and get someone like a Fashanu, who I think is more of a win now prospect, I could see that being more of a possibility. But, you know, no disrespect at all to Amarius Mims, like, go Dogs.
Yeah,
you know, obviously that would fill the UGA quota as well. Which, you know, a team has to draft at least one Georgia Bulldog if they want to be successful. But I do think he's more of that. I think he would make a bit more sense if this team was, you know, more so entrenched in a rebuild versus trying to get out of that rebuild this year and really trying to win now and win that division.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, it is an interesting one because it's like, I think they're trying to move on from Caleb McGarry next year. I think that's the plan. And, you know, I think they would love to have an in-house option to replace him.
Joe Alt
would be nice, you know, but I think if they take Joe Alt, Joe Alt's the future left tackle. There's no question about that. But could he play right tackle for a few years? You know, yes, absolutely.
That's what they wanted to do with I mean, that's what they drafted Matthews for. Remember, yeah. He played that preseason at right tackle, that camp at right tackle.
Yep.
And then Sam Baker went down for the year in preseason. And they just thrust Matthews, you know, into the fire a little bit, which, you know, so sometimes it just happens that way.
Sometimes that's how it goes. But, yeah, so, I mean, it, you know, I don't think, yeah, so, like, Joe Alt would obviously fill that role, too. But I think it's, like, if you do a trade down, and that could be an opportunity to be like, okay, well, now that we're going to, like, have Amarius Mims, we're going to, like, let him sit behind McGarry for a year, and then he could come in and be our big-time right tackle. You know, Mims doesn't have any experience playing on the left side. But I mean, obviously if they're going to have years to develop him, then he could get there, you know, at some point, but, he just hasn't played much at all. I think he's played like less than 1,000 snaps, like in college football. So, you know, kind of an interesting situation there with him going in the top 20, despite that, that's how physically gifted he is. But you know, I think ultimately like the Falcons are looking at all of these questions that we brought up, like, you know, how do they want to take a tackle? Do they want to take an edge rusher? You know, obviously I think that you can make arguments for both of those. I think also like wide receiver with Rome Odunze, like, you know, Drake London's going to need a new contract in like several, you know, it's not like imminent, but you know, 2-3 years at this point. So, you know, getting Rome Odunze as your cheap wide receiver too, because when the Falcons go to pay Drake London, they're probably going to be moving on from Darnell Mooney. That's just kind of how this is going to work. But then they would have Rome Odunze for another, you know, 2 to 3 years on a like cheap cost controlled rookie contract to pair with Drake London. So
personally,
it's like, yeah,
personally, I don't look at Mooney as a wide receiver too. Either way, I know they're paying him as a wide receiver too. And I have my reservations about that contract. But you know, that's neither here nor there at the moment. What's done is done, but I still think that the team's wide receiver room isn't complete one way or another.
Yeah.
If they went into week one with this wide receiver depth chart, like, okay, but I wouldn't really be super comfortable with that either.
Yeah. I think we've got a draft addition and probably another free agent coming in. Probably not going to be a huge free agent, but you know, we'll see what shakes out. But I mean, I think wide receiver is definitely still a need, which is why I think Rome Odunze is something that is not only possible, but potentially likely if he falls. I mean, if they go BPA, I think it like Rome Odunze would be the BPA. So assuming Joe Alt's not there, but either Rome or Joe Alt will be there. They won't both be there unless like a fifth quarterback sneaks in or something weird. So, you know, I think it'll be Joe Alt or Rome Odunze. One of those two is likely to make it because it seems like four quarterbacks are going to go. So, you know, if that happens, then you're going to be looking at one of those two guys. And again, that's going to open up another avenue for a trade down if somebody wants one of those two guys. And we'll see if this is the year that the Falcons take it. But
if you are team trade down, then you should really want J.J. McCarthy to fall to 8 because nothing girds a team's loins for a trade up like the possibility of moving up for a quarterback. And I think you can, you know, again, I don't know. I don't see it with McCarthy. I do not see why he's going to be a top 10 pick. Like, I don't think he's a top 10 worthy pick, but it's the quarterback tax. The top 3 picks are all going to be quarterbacks. And, you know, I think desperation results in stuff like this. And, you know, I personally would hate it if the Falcons spent the 8th pick or spend a top 10 pick on J.J. McCarthy. But, you know, if someone else wants to, in my opinion, make that mistake, then, yeah, take their draft picks, move back for them, and let them make that mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, with McCarthy, it's all about the traits and the fact that there's not a lot of quarterbacks available, and everybody and a lot of teams need one. Like, there's going to be four teams getting quarterbacks, and there's going to be like three teams left out that don't have a quarterback and they need one. So like that's what's going to happen. You know, I mean, and the SB Nation mock, for example, the Raiders traded up to get Michael Penix like immediately after the Falcons traded down with the Rams, and then the Broncos took Bo Nix at 12. So it's like, you know, like clearly there's a sense of desperation from the writers that cover these teams, because these teams haven't addressed quarterback like at all. So it's, you know, what are they going to do? So, I mean, it's like, is it going to be, you know, maybe these guys aren't slam dunks, but it's like, you got to get something going to
look. All I'm going to say is, wandering through that quarterback wilderness for a certain amount of time will make a team do crazy things, because we've been spoiled with Matt Ryan, and it's only been 2 years of Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder. And, you know, I was ready to do anything, you know, yes, to sort of, you know, fix that position. So, you know what? I completely understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, if you don't have a quarterback, you're trying to get one. And if you do have a quarterback, now you're trying to actually win something. So that's just the way this goes. Right. And Brandon Brass does mention A.J. Simmons, who was going to be entering the NFL draft, did unfortunately have a heart attack and die at the age of 25. Very sad, unfortunate story, sadly. So Brandon asked for a moment of silence for A.J. Simmons. Absolutely. A.J., you know, obviously tough, about to go into the draft. Very tragic. So thoughts out to A.J. and his family for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, just one more, you know, point, just mention about AJ Simon right there is you know, so we're talking about the draft. Some things are bigger than the draft, and, you know, age 25, heart attack. That's just, man, that's just brutal. The young man who had his whole life ahead of him, and yet, you know, you just never know, you know, when our time on this earth could be up. And, you know, prayers to his family, and, you know, I hope that they find that peace and comfort. And, you know, it's just it is brutal. It's just it's just a terrible thing that happened. And, you know, I don't really know what else to say. It's just, when you hear about someone, you know, dying at that age, no matter what, and to die of that age of something so sudden, yeah, it's, man, that's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely tragic. So certainly thoughts out to him and his family. You know, these are the stories you don't want to hear, obviously, going into the draft, but this type of stuff happens every year, you know, car accidents, heart attacks, all that stuff. It's just terrible stuff. So, yeah, sad story, unfortunately, heading into this year's draft. But, you know, thankfully, it is a time where a lot of dreams are fulfilled too. So it can be good and bad. And, you know, obviously we see some guys that have to struggle a lot, and then end up having a much better career. And some guys, you know, obviously, have quite the surprise on draft night. So it's a night of complicated emotions for many, certainly. All right. Well, I know we had a question from George, saying, I think the top four offensive line prospects, which are in his mind, would be Ault, J.C. Latham, Troy Fatanu, I think it is actually Troy Fatanu, and Olufashanu, are all better than the edges in this class. I know we need edge, but the fact is, you win on the line of scrimmage, you win the game, we'll score in the red zone opening holes. I think, like, Ault is definitely ahead of the edges. I'd probably have Fatanu as well above the edges, maybe. I think I'd have Latu maybe over everyone but Ault. But, you know, that's kind of quibbling. I think all those guys are kind of in the same range, so, you know, I won't disagree too much with that. But certainly instead of... Certainly, you know, I think the Falcons have the need for the edge more, so that seems like it's going to lift those guys up. But I think all those prospects you mentioned are pretty intriguing guys. Fatanu in particular has definitely seen his stock rise a lot.
I'm here for it. Like... look, I know, I understand that offensive line is not a big need, but this team is not, you know, so ironclad on the offensive. Like, don't get me wrong, I really like what, you know, this offensive line has done the past couple of years, and, you know, I've always been the first to praise Coach Dwayne Ledford, but I don't know. I just feel like this team is one injury on the offensive line away from things, you know, sort of getting really bad, or, you know, just some regression along this offensive line from things getting really bad. So, you know, I'm always here for building up the trenches. Like, it's just, I know it's not the sexy approach. You know, it's the high-flying analytical, you know, era of NFL football where, you know, we want the big name wide receivers. It's the fantasy football dominated era of, you know, how many receiving yards can you get? How many passing yards can you throw for? You know, the touchdown scores. But all of that starts with the big guys in the middle. And I mean, we've seen it with other teams. We've seen it with this team in the past that, you know, if that offensive line isn't built up, and if that offensive line doesn't withstand the pressure, then, you know, it doesn't matter who you have around, or it doesn't matter who your skill position players are. So I'm, you know, I know it's not sexy, but I'm always here for enhancing the offensive line.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any problem with that. You know, I think investing in the offensive line is never a bad idea, certainly. And I think investing, by the same token, investing in the defensive line is never a bad idea. So I think either way, to address the trenches. And I think if they don't do it in the first round and they go a different direction, then they absolutely have to find a way to bolster it later in the draft. But obviously we'll see how that develops. We got a question from Corey with the $2 asking, what would you consider to be the greatest value of these three? Roma Dunze at 8, Ladd McConkey at 43, or Ricky Pearsall at 74? That's actually a good question, because I think those are all pretty close. I mean, like, to me, it's like probably Pearsall at 74, because I think Pearsall could easily go before 43 or right around 43. So the difference in picks there, I think, is like bigger. You know, and Adunze, he could probably, I think right around 8 is like his fair value. And then McConkey, I think, is going to be, you know, somewhere between the end of the first round and 43. But McConkey is a good value at 43, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think, Adnan?
I mean, you're not wrong, but also at the same time, you know, Ladd McConkey being a dog in that,
well, that's,
you know,
true.
That championship pedigree and that, you know, winning pedigree, yeah, that just sort of should always shoot these players up the draft board, and it would fulfill the dog quota. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's one thing this team needs more of. It's more Georgia Bulldogs, no matter what. And, you know, I mean, jokes aside, I would be thrilled if McConkey was there in the second round. Yeah. Like, I think that would be sort of a no-brainer type pick. Now, unless you take Adunze in the first round, because I think that's a little bit I feel like going wide receiver would be a bit too much. But at the same time, yeah. I'll believe it when I see it regarding Adunze in the first round. I still don't think they would pull the trigger on taking another skill position player 4 years ago.
Yes, I had some very angry comments from UGA fans saying that we needed to put more respect on Dominic Lovett, the receiver we took at the end of the draft. Also, that he isn't entering the draft. So, you know, look, shame on UPFF for putting him in there. But
we were literally just drafting based on vibes last 2 rounds.
We were just drafting a dog. Like, I did not watch Dominic Lovett. I never claimed to have
like,
done so.
Literally, the last – we said the last 2 rounds, one would be a guy with a cool name, and the other one would be literally any Georgia Bulldog, like, period.
Any,
like,
Georgia Bulldog, yeah.
Like, why are you guys so mad? Like, who cares? Like, yeah. It was literally just, like, last few minutes, we're just trying to vibe it out. But, you know, who would have thought that, you know...
Apparently he was their number one receiver, Adnan. We need to put more respect on his name.
People would be so upset about a sixth round
draft picking him
up.
Multiple comments were very upset. Clearly, we're clueless about UGA. I don't know if the red and black like threw people off and they thought this was a UGA show or something, and so they were very disappointed in our UGA knowledge. But, yeah, I mean, Dominic Lovett, like, I mean, he could definitely be a guy next year. I know he's kind of primed to be a top receiver for Georgia this year, given, you know, the guys that they've lost to the NFL. So maybe we'll have to put some respect on his name in 2025, you know, so there's still a chance for that. Yeah, I thought that was very silly. We got Corey with the two. Knowing I'm about to get flamed, I'm going to ask. Okay, I'm ready. I'm prepared. If you could trade Kyle Pitts for Carolina's 33 and 39 with Bowers there at 8, would you do it? So two early seconds for Kyle Pitts. I mean, I wouldn't trade him to Carolina ever. Now if it, but, you know.
I mean, two early seconds, that's sort of Kyle Pitts' value, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's fair value. Yeah.
But, like, you're not getting a top 10 pick for him. I think we all have to accept the fact that that was a bad pick that the Falcons made a few years ago. He's not worth the fourth pick, but I mean, you would also have to use the first rounder on a tight end or on Bowers. Well, I mean, you don't have to.
You could do Odunze too, and, you know, but
in this scenario you do, but, or in this scenario you would be taking him. I mean, I don't know. Like, I do think that trading him to that division rival would be a bad taste in your mouth, but the value I think is more than fine.
The value is fine. I just don't think I would do it because I, you know, maybe I'm just a homer, but I think Kyle Pitts is, I don't know that he's ever going to be like, oh, they were right to take him over a potential franchise quarterback. And, you know, who knows what would have happened if Justin Fields came to Atlanta
I don't think that they were right to take him over Jamar Chase, even if you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you know, well, obviously Jamar's had the far superior career and all that stuff. And I still think Pitts has an opportunity to be worth a top 10 pick, but because I meant he was like one of the youngest rookies in the draft. Like, I think Kyle Pitts is still not 24 years old. So like the story of Kyle Pitts, I think, is still very early in its telling. And I think there's an opportunity for him now with a real quarterback, no offense, sorry to the other quarterbacks that were here. But the last time he was with a real quarterback, he had 1,000 yards, and almost broke the rookie record for tight end. So Let's before we decide that Kyle Pitts is writing him off entirely, let's see how he fares with a real quarterback this year. Maybe I mean, I think we could always quibble about who needs to do X, Y, Z, you know, to justify X pick. Like, maybe he'll never be like quote unquote worth 4, but I still think he can be a very good player, and I guess we'll see if he can justify. But I think this year is kind of like the put up or shut up year where we need to see it. If he's healthy, I think he absolutely could be a big time player. And again, if Kyle Pitts like shows up this year and has like a 1,200 yard season, the narrative will completely change, like overnight. Like, no one's going to care that he was mediocre the last couple of years. If he's like a 1,200 yard, 10 touchdown guy this year, Adnan, everyone's going to be like, oh, Kyle Pitts is great. He's amazing. You know? So it's just like things change fast in the NFL. So I think that, and I think that's like not out of the realm of possibility that could happen either. So I think that's obviously a very rosy interpretation of what could happen this year, but it's possible. He has that level of talent and that level of ability. And we saw him as a rookie deliver a 1,000 yard season. So it's possible. I guess we'll see if it can happen. I certainly hope it does, because I love Kyle Pitts. I think he could be a top level receiving tight end, just receiver in general. And I just think he needed a coaching staff that could use him properly, which was not here. And a quarterback that could get him the ball. You know, he has the most unrealized air yards in the NFL, I think, over the last few years. So hoping for something better there. And then Corey has a Hawks question. Why did we not sign Vit Adnan?
Look, I was pounding the drum to sign Vit. That is arguably my favorite player on this team right now. But literally the only reason why I can think about why they didn't sign him, because they need him for this play and they need him for the playoffs if they get there. He's still going to be a restricted free agent even if they signed him. I mean, I don't know. Like, I have no idea why. Like,
So why was he not on the – I don't understand. Is this like a weird NBA thing where he's like contract expired at the end of the season or something?
He was on a two-way contract, so he wasn't technically on a full contract, so he's not eligible to play in the playoffs. But I was literally refreshing Twitter down to the last hour being like, all right, I'm waiting for what we signed him news. I'm waiting for news that we signed him and we didn't sign him. So that's something where I don't know. I think the team completely fumbled. I think they wanted to keep Trent Forrest instead, which why? I don't know. Like, I can talk about this topic for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah,
I'd rather
yeah,
not,
but
because
yeah.
it's literally just getting me heated. But
yeah.
I don't think there is a single scenario that makes sense for why. Like, I'd get it if you signed him and if he was an unrestricted free agent, then sure. But he would have been a restricted free agent either way. So, you know, you can match any offer no matter what. But, I mean, I'll be really upset if they let him go in free agency now, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he was, like, hurt or something. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. So,
no, he wasn't even hurt. It was just he played the last game after he wasn't signed. So, it makes zero sense at all.
Yeah,
like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm a Hawks homer, but it literally makes no sense at all.
Yeah, yeah. And then, there was one from George earlier about the Hawks. George wants to know, Adnan, if you had to choose, would you take a Hawks championship or a Falcons Super Bowl? I think you've answered this before. I know George says he would take the Falcons Super Bowl because he's yet to forgive the Hawks for their errors in the past.
I know I'm on a very Falcons-centric show, and I think it'll be a very unpopular opinion, but I would honestly take the Hawks championship.
Boo.
I know. Your boos mean nothing to me. I've seen what you cheer for.
Why are you booing me? I'm right.
Look, I literally lead the sixth man section. A Hawks championship would mean that I am literally in the building for every single home playoff game, including all the finals games. Like, it's...
So for selfish reasons then, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's selfish reasons, but also, like, the Hawks were my first love before, like, I even started watching football. Fun story. In the 2021 title, during the 2021 Eastern Conference Finals run, the team actually, Giannis got hurt in game 4. So it looked like the Hawks were legitimately about to make it to the finals. I was in Europe at the time. So I bought tickets. You know, I was back home, back in my homeland. And I was going to be there for the next 10 or 15 days. And literally when it looked like the team was about to make it to the finals, I was looking at tickets to cut my vacation short so I could come back to Atlanta so I can be here for the finals. So the Hawks stuff goes deep for me. It goes really deep.
Yeah. Okay. You heard it here first, folks. Adnan is a traitor to the Falcons. You know, the Hawks are his first love, and we're just going to be, sloppy seconds for him. No, I'm just kidding. No, that makes total sense. You backed it up with good intel. You know, you're wrong, but
you're wrong, but I respect your answer.
Yeah, I respect your wrongness for sure. But
I get it. I'm on a very Falcons center. The Falcons are right there with them for me. They're like right here. But I mean, gun to my head, if you know,
I appreciate the honesty. Yeah.
Look, I'm a man that answers the tough questions. I could have wishy-washied it and just beat around the bush and been like, oh, well, they would never be in the finals at the same time. No. You know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to answer the question with I'm going to stand on business with this.
I respect it. I respect your wrongness on that one. That's you have to go out there on a Falcon show and just slander the fans like that.
I should not slander anyone.
No, I respect it for real. It was a good explanation too. I think it's it makes sense with the background, so I appreciate that. But guys, fun show tonight. This will be, of course, the penultimate Wednesday show before the draft. We got one more next week that will be the live mock draft for everyone. That'll be a lot of fun. And then, of course, we will have a live draft party all three nights of the draft. I know someone asked about guests. I'm still working on the guest list, trying to coordinate schedules and seeing how many folks we can squeeze in. But I will keep you guys posted as soon as we know. But yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be Adnan and I most of the time. And then I know we're going to try to get folks rotating in when they're available throughout. And of course, like I said, $50 NFL Shop gift cards every night of the draft. We're going to be going live through the whole thing. As long as the Falcons are picking, we'll be there. Day 3, if the Falcons have made their picks, or they trade away their late round ones like they sometimes do, then, we'll probably close day 3 early if the Falcons have made their final picks. But other than that, we'll be there the whole time. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for watching. Please do subscribe if you haven't done so already. Check out the channel memberships. Check out the Patreon. Leave that 5-star review in your podcast platform of choice. Join the community Discord server. Want to thank, of course, Adnan Ikic, my co-host at Say Which Way, for coming on tonight. Adnan, anything you'd like to plug before we sign off?
No, not really. I will plug the show. You know, we're doing, you know, it's your one-stop shop. We're really killing it with this, with the draft content. We're killing it with the off-season content. We will continue to do so. If you, you know, haven't ever been on the website and you're on the show, I don't know how. you know, but I guess crazier things have happened. But, yeah, definitely check out thefalcoholic.com where, you know, we've got you covered on all things Falcons.
Yes, absolutely. We do all that good stuff for you guys, and we appreciate everyone hanging out this year. I know some of you are probably, you know, hearts beating with anticipation for this stressful Hawks play-in experience here. So I know you, I don't want to keep you
Mine
guys
is.
From that.
Mine yeah, certainly
yeah.
is.
Yeah, don't want to keep you guys from that. So we'll go ahead and sign off here. I'm Kevin, I'm Falcoholic Kevin. Thanks again for joining us, folks. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. We will see you very soon. We're going to have, I'll have another mock draft coming out. And then, of course, I will have Thor Nystrom giving us some final draft takes before draft week gets going. Then I'll probably have one more mock draft like the day of the draft, just because you guys are just fiends for the mock drafts. I don't blame you. They're fun. And yeah, we will be back then. So keep your eyes peeled, your ears open for any draft stuff that's coming out, because it's going to start coming hot and fast the last week of that draft. We could see some pre-trades, all that good stuff. So until then, folks, have a great night. Enjoy the game. If you're a Hawks fan, we will see you next time on the Falcoholic Live and Dirty Birds and Brews. Have a great day, folks.
All right, guys.